This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:16 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Shaoning and Chen Li. In the meantime, we're discussing infrastructure projects that have been brought back to life. Specifically today, the MRT3 in Kuala Lumpur. So the MRT3 project is dubbed as the final piece of connectivity in the KL public transport system, linking the central business district with the other radial rail lines.
And this project was first announced in 2016, but was scrapped in 2018 when Pakatan Harapan came into power. However, on March 4th, Prime Minister Dato Sri Ismail Sabri announced that the project has been revived, along with several other mega projects. So this week, our Transport Minister Dato Sri Wikasiong announced further details.
And so it includes the estimated construction cost of 31 billion ringgit and another 8 billion for land acquisitions. So the project will involve building 31 stations over 50 km of rail lines and is scheduled to be fully operational by 2030.
But how will this project be funded and what can be improved upon to ensure that the transportation system in Kuala Lumpur is truly future-proofed? So we turn to Chung Yifan, independent transport analyst, for his thoughts on this. Yifan, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us today. Can I start off with the question of funding? So it was announced that there'll be five packages that will be opened for tender in May this year, and each work package will have private funding investments, investment requirements. So that's PFI requirements. How does the portion of private funding investments work along with government funding for these projects?
Good morning. So it is not, at this moment, it is not entirely clear how the PFI or private financing initiative for MRT3 will take shape. We'll need to wait until the tender document is being announced or more details will be made known by the government. However, what was publicly known is that the main contractors need to step in to finance the construction if or when the government funding falls short, which means private sector's contractors will be asked to include financing proposal in their tender bid for the respective work packages in for the MRT3. So this is highly unusual because normally the contractors will just do the construction and be paid by the project owner. In this case, will be MRT Corp and the government. So For this project, what is clear is this: the public funding gap is a major concern, at least on the government part. But we do not want to delay MRT3 anymore for many reasons. And the government just pressed the go-ahead button and look for financing options from the private sectors. Mm. But we do know this, right? As far as interest rate and financing cost is concerned, it is almost always more costly for private companies to finance, to go to the market, seeking bank loans, etc., compared with what the government, finance it through development expenditure or issuing bonds. But we do have a budget ceiling to follow, and the government is looking at other options. So this is what we know now, yeah.
Okay. I think in the past there was a discussion on the PPP model or private-public partnership model. Is this still in the works, and how feasible it is for this project?
Yes, there was discussions before, prior to, I think this is under the Pakatan Harapan administration, to really look into this concept called value capture for urban rail projects. What this means is that when the rail line passes through a mature property, for example, shopping malls, hotels, etc., it actually brings a lot more business opportunities, increasing revenues for these property owners. So in return, it is reasonable to charge maybe a connection fee or ask private landowners to contribute to the development cost of these rail projects. So this is being practiced in other countries like Hong Kong and some European countries. I am not sure, based on the current planning, whether this component will still be looked into for MRT3. It will be quite disappointing if this is not being considered because, as we know, if we look at the MRT 3 alignment, it is a combination of greenfield sites as well as a number of already mature neighborhood or mature commercial area like Mount Kiara, Sentul, etc. So I would say it is, given the very tight financial constraints, it is absolutely crucial for MRTCOM and the government to tap into more private funding for this project. Yeah.
Okay, so let's be clear. It's a little bit like when the highway operators ask a developer to fund the exit of a highway, isn't it, into their housing project?
Yeah, I think there are some similarities in that. Of course, the cost is, has to be reasonable and work on both sides. I just want to add very quickly one point here. You want the private sectors to have the skin in the game and the stakes in the success of the project. Because when they pay a certain portion of fee, they would make sure that ridership really can increase, because that will work to their interest as well. Okay. So we want ridership for the project. Yeah.
And I'm just curious, MRT 1, MRT 2 completed. Are there lessons that we can learn? Were there shortcomings that we perhaps should consider before we start MRT 3? Because the issue is always sustainability, and that these projects are self-funded, or at least they cover their costs at some point in time.
Yeah, I think two points here. The lessons from MRT 1 or 2 before, I think number one, just build and the riders or the passengers will come. This doesn't work. You have to build and plan properly and make sure that the fare is really affordable. Accessibility to the stations are really well thought. You have good covered walkways, and the locations and the route are well selected. Then it will be successful. Success ultimately will be decided by the parameters of the number of ridership, the safety of the system, etc. So that's number one. Don't just build. You have to plan properly, and then it will be a success. Number two, go back to the value capture point. We look at MRT 1, which is already in KL for more than three, four years. The stations are huge, very large, with a lot of unutilized space. The stations no doubt look very nice, but all this extra space are untapped commercial potential. So at the outset, when we design the station, when we design the project, we need to build in other commercial components. The non-fare revenue components are very, very important. So this has to be incorporated into MRT 3 right from the beginning.
Yifan, one of the comments that was made by the Transport Minister was regarding a congestion charge or environmental fee. This is something that might be implemented for vehicles entering the city once MRT 3 is fully operational. What do you think of this? How do you envisage these fees to be implemented?
Well, this is interesting because the congestion charge is already a Section 12 under the Land Public Transport Act 2010. So the government has a foresight since 12 years ago to build this into our legislation. However, if we look at this pragmatically, will this be feasible for Kuala Lumpur or for Greater KL in the near future? I suspect the answer is negative. Because there are only a handful of cities in the world, Singapore, Stockholm, London, Milan, and I think no more, just maybe five or six, that has congestion pricing in place for a reasonably long period. Do we have the conditions required compared to these cities? So maybe not. One reason is because Kuala Lumpur is not really a very core city. We have not only downtown KL, we have Petaling Jaya and other city centres. So how do you define a city centre core, and then you fence up, sort of fence up and toll up all together to ensure people who go in will pay the charge? Ultimately, politics, right? It will probably kill the idea, because neither side wants to be unpopular. My last point on congestion pricing is this. if we ask our listeners who are driving, who are paying tolls every day when we go to work, right? Aren't we already have some sort of congestion pricing in place? We all pay tolls every day, and that doesn't deter more and more cars in the city. So what makes us think, you know, if we implement another layer of congestion pricing, it will actually bring the number of car vehicles down on the road? That is highly uncertain, I would say. Yeah.
Okay, and last question from us. What do you think of the target completion timeline of 2030? Is it feasible to achieve?
It is highly ambitious. If we look at the track record of, large infrastructure projects, whether in Malaysia or in other countries, the promises of completion on time almost always fall short due to a number of reasons. So I would caution the 2030 completion time. I know the MRT3 projects are planned to be finished phase by phase. It would say that the first phase will be done by 2028. We will see if that, we hope that that will really materialize. But bear in mind that MRT2, which is supposed to be operational, the first phase fully operational 2 years ago, are still undergoing testing stages, suffering from multiple delays. And this is not only due to COVID-19. Yeah.
Yifan, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Chung Yifan, independent transport policy analyst, giving us his reactions to the announcement that the MRT3 project will be revived, ending with a note of caution there that we can plan, but usually these plans take longer than expected. And I have to say, I'm not really looking forward to more construction on the roads as they build this MRT3 project, something that we're going to be keeping in mind.
I do hope that they would consider the location of the stations and also the connectivity, as in like the covered walkways, the car parks, because this is always not very user friendly.
I would like them to be more transparent about the pricing. Disclose to us the exact cost, how much the contractors are making, because basically this is public infrastructure. I think that's important.
31 billion ringgit.
And 8 billion for land acquisitions.
In estimations, yeah. Something we're going to be compiling our questions, and we will follow this as it develops. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.